today I have another special guest. There's a few things that I want to bring in to talk about. He's actually an expert in many fields, but the first thing that I thought we should really discuss is how he's really turned his life around. Give us a little breakdown of what you've done. What have you done in the past couple of years?
Whatever I did, I got a great intro from it. what have I done in the past couple of years? I think the biggest thing I've done is my move up from Southern California to San Francisco.
And you didn't move because of a job. You didn't move because of school. You didn't move because of a relationship. You didn't move for any of those reasons.
Nope, I didn't move for any of those reasons. And I guess I was looking for all those things
in my move. You're looking for all those things.
Of course.
And currently you have them all, save... I guess, yes.
So I was, I'll give you some background.
Give us the background, yeah, good idea.
There was a group that I was part of in college, and we took a trip up to San Francisco, and I had never been. And the local San Franciscoites kind of toured us around the city, and I'd never experienced anything like that. I resonated with that place. I felt, this is where I need to be.
I mean, you were raised in Southern California your entire life.
I until I was maybe like six, I was in the Midwest.
Oh.
But my memory doesn't even go back that far. So yes, like I'm a SoCal native.
Went to school in SoCal.
Went to school in SoCal. I mean, in my mind, I'm a SoCal boy.
Right.
But there was nothing in SoCal that made me feel the way that I felt in San Francisco.
Right.
I was like, I just need to do this. I need to be here. Maybe it's the fact that there is no like quote unquote city.
Yeah.
In SoCal. And this San Francisco kind of gave me that.
And this was what, like 2000, 2001, something like that?
I think I might have come up in 1999.
Okay.
Something like that.
And so you knew that you wanted to come here eventually?
It wasn't even a question. It was just when. Do I want to go somewhere else? This, that? No. I knew that I wanted to be in San Francisco. I just didn't know how long it was going to take and how much work and when the chips would fall into place.
By my accounting, the chips actually took a while because you didn't get here until, say, 2003, 2004. So
the end of 2004.
End of 2004.
Yeah.
Let's walk through that because what I'm particularly interested in is there's a time when you were trying to transition careers and transition jobs, and our paths intersected at the unemployment office, essentially, where we were both unemployed for a brief moment in time. We got to hang out a lot. But even during that time, you were very focused on getting to that next step. Which I like to see. I need some inspiration. I'm at that step now. I'm unemployed. I need to step it up.
All right. Well, you're already at San Francisco, so
I'm in San Francisco.
Goal achieved.
That's true.
Okay, so
what were you doing before when you got out of college?
I'm going to try to go on the timeline.
Yeah.
Like 99 or 2000, you know, fell in love with San Francisco and said, this is where I'm going to go. But it wasn't until 2002 that I graduated.
Okay.
And I graduated in December, so I had to, you know, it was... January of 2003 was, okay, I'm in the real world, I've got my degree, I can finally leave Irvine, where do I go? And I rigorously spent as much time as I could sending out resumes, making phone calls, making contacts, doing everything. And I have an Excel spreadsheet, or I had an Excel spreadsheet of who I contacted, what date I contacted, what version of my resume I submitted. And this was like hundreds of rows long, and I would go back. I used a three-week time span, and I would go back and say, okay, if I haven't heard from, you know, 3 weeks ago, I'm going to hit these all up, and then I'm going to find some new ones.
Okay.
So every day, the beginning of my job hunt was, let's try to hit the old leads, hit the leads that are 3 weeks old. And and a lot of times, you know, the follow-up, it was a good technique, I guess, but it didn't get me a job in San Francisco. So for the first, you know, maybe month, I was looking in San Francisco, and then... As bills continued to come in and as financial obligations seemed harder and harder to meet, I picked up a job working for my friend who owned a car wash.
Okay.
So I worked at the car wash while I job hunted, and I extended my job search to anywhere in California. I decided that San Francisco was going to be a two-phase approach. I was going to have to get a job, make some money, and then move up to San Francisco or transition.
Were you happy at the car wash?
The car wash did make me very happy. Actually, you know what? It was very humbling. There was one portion where at the end of the day, this guy asked me to help him out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like the vacuum guy. We went to the collection tank where all the stuff, all the shit gets taken, vacuumed out, right. And we like sifted through all that shit and dirt and debris for pennies and nickels. And like, I mean, I didn't split it 50-50 with the guy. I gave him the whole share, but it's like, that's what this guy has. Like, I have a degree.
Right.
This is not where I'm going to be in a week or a year. Whereas this guy, it's kind of where he's at.
He's sucking up pennies from the car
wash. And so that, I mean, stuff like that, moments like that fueled my motivation even more.
Right.
Because I knew that I could achieve like an office job in a high rise in San Francisco someday, which is, you know, in my sights, or was in my sights. So I got a job as using my major as a mechanical engineer at a forging company where, you know, we basically heat up metal and squish it and sell it to a machine shop that, you know, trims it up and heat treats it to a finished part that goes into an engine.
I mean, you're a very good engineer, but the thing is, the problem with the mechanical engineering is that all the places that you work at are never urban cities, because clearly if you can have a factory, if you can have like a big plant, it's not going to be located in a city. So even when you lived in L.A., you didn't live in L.A., it was a little bit outside of L.A. Any of the jobs you're looking for are always a little bit outside the city.
Right.
So
yep. The manufacturing, they try to find a nice mix between like a suburban area and an area where land is cheap, because not only do they, you know, they've got a lot of pollutants or whatever in their manufacturing process, so they can't have a huge high per capita.
Yeah.
But they also, they need acres and acres of land. They're building big stuff. Even just building stuff. So it's not like a design firm where you just need a desk and a computer and you can pump out product.
But as a mechanical engineer, it's a very stable job. It's a very, you know, it's something that you went to school for mechanical engineering. You studied it. It's relatively, you know how to do it. It's easy. Like, you can see your career path there. Mm-hmm. But you're like, forget it. I'm switching. I'm going to something I haven't trained in.
You know, and I strategically did that even back when I went to school. I thought, with my engineering degree, I can kind of leapfrog into anything I want. If I want to be a musician, hey, it doesn't matter. If I want to be something in physics, if I want to be something in finance, if I want to do anything, my mechanical engineering degree might not have all the exact tools, but I've learned how to think, how to learn, and a lot of times, you know, people are impressed with an engineering degree. So I thought, you know, I could go into pretty much anything. If I want to be an investment banker, a mechanical engineering degree will help me. An art degree, unfortunately, will not. So I strategically chose an engineering major.
Right.
Just because it was the most versatile and I didn't know what I wanted to do. But if it was engineering, that'd be cool. I tried it out. It's not that I didn't like it. I just didn't like where I was at. And you know, the fact that I couldn't move to somewhere cooler.
Right, cool.
In my opinion. So, I probably could move to the Bay Area, but I'd be living 50 miles from the city.
Right.
Which is kind of how I was in SoCal.
not the place you wanted to be.
Right.
So you got to SF, you're looking for some jobs. Like, well, tell me more, fill in the more.
Okay, special. So I'm working at this job, and I had a few living situations. One was by myself. Really close to work, and that was probably the most depressing point of my entire life. but it was, you know, it built character, I guess. And then I lived with four guys or four of us in mm-hmm. this house, and two of them were my close buddies from college, and one of them was just kind of a guy, and he was annoying. I didn't like him.
Okay.
And I distinctly remember in January of 2004. We were outside having a cigarette, and he said, you know, I know we've got like 10 more months on our lease, but I just kind of want to nail it down. So, well, you know, what are you thinking? You guys, you want to live together or, you know? And right there at that moment, I said, hey, if all goes well, I'm moving to San Francisco after this.
Mm-hmm.
And like, just saying that to him, because it's always been in the back of my mind, but just saying that to him, I was like, hey, I think I just set myself a goal.
Okay.
And so from that like meaningless conversation, I started a journal.
Mm-hmm.
And I would journal. It was my SF journal. And my mission statement was to conquer San Francisco.
Okay.
So, I mean, and that's self-defined, but it was basically I would document just like what am I doing to move forward to San Francisco. Opened up a savings account, lowered like the number of minutes allocated on my phone bill. I did everything I could to increase my margin.
You, like made lunch for yourself every day, I recall.
I made lunch for myself every day. And for the days where I couldn't do that, I would get like I would go to the drive-thru and get like whatever two 99-cent sandwiches.
Right.
And like that was it. I'd eat lunch in my car, take a nap, write in my SF journal. It was just basically every action I was doing was geared towards San Francisco.
Focused.
It was focused.
Okay.
On Friday night when everyone was going out, I was like, you know, I'm going to stay home and drink half a bottle of vodka while I job search. And, you know, that was my release. That was my fun. And I thought, I'll go and blow $200 at the bar in San Francisco.
Right.
I'm not going to do that when I'm down here feeling miserable.
You really sacrificed. I mean, you had a plan, a goal, and you sacrificed.
Yeah, I did. But it's like I had to do it. It didn't even feel like a conscious choice. It felt like something that I was just I needed to do.
Okay.
And if I didn't do it, like a cloud would come over me. Why did I waste? And I have journal entries I've read. Why did I waste my time today eating with so and so? I don't even like that person. I could have been job hunting. Or why did I buy the number 7 with, you know, extra fries? Because
I
didn't need an $8 meal. I could have just, you know, I could have spent that money.
Right.
Everything was so focused on that. But just quitting my job, having a savings account, and driving up to San Francisco wasn't enough. Like, that's hardly conquering San Francisco.
Right.
So when I did finally move up, I crashed with my friend in Saratoga, which is about, I would say, 40, 50 miles south of the city.
Okay.
So that gave me maybe 3 or 4 months to familiarize myself with where I wanted to live, what kind of industry was up here. I had been job hunting, but from afar.
Right.
And it's way different when you're job hunting, especially in a horribly crippled market like anything engineering was a couple years after 2001, the 9/11 incident.
Right.
So, I found an apartment and moved up. And with a lot of my ample time, I found this, I have a friend who is really into Craigslist. Craigslist is like her favorite website.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was always sending me postings of just any, because she knew that I was an engineer.
Yeah.
She threw me engineering postings, apartment listings, things for free. But even like she would find funny stuff like the funny missed encounters or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So every day I would have a couple of Craigslist postings just from this friend, and one of them caught my eye of free bartending school.
Okay.
And so you had to kind of be what's called a contributor, where you call different bars and you update the database of who's hiring, or who needs a bar, and this is for graduates of the bartending
right.
school. So I had to put in a couple hours of that, maybe 20 or 30 hours of that, and then I got to go to school for free.
Nice.
So I went to bartending school. I met a couple of people. I actually dated the job placement coordinator.
Very nice. Which paid dividends for our friends.
which was definitely, you know, because she knew, I would say, a bartender at almost every bar we went.
Right.
Because she had placed them there. That had some perks.
Where did you end up bartending?
So I bartended at a few different places. The first place was Ambassador's Lounge, which is owned by E40.
Okay.
Down in downtown San Jose. Right, the rapper. I saw the Dog Pound perform.
Nice. who was in the Dog Pound?
I think it was Daz Corrupt. I think it's Daz and Corrupt.
Okay. Okay.
Daz and Corrupt. So I saw them performing. I only bartended there for a few weeks, and they were only open like Friday, Saturday.
Right.
And every drink was $9, so you'd expect that $1 back as a tip.
Right.
I would say 50% of the time that dollar got
swiped.
then on the completely different side of the coin, a place that I got a bartending gig kind of like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, kind of the off
mm-hmm.
because I was the new guy, was at a place called BS Bar and Grill. BS Bar and Grill. BS Bar. They had food, but it was just like burgers and steaks. And it was in the heart of the Castro.
Right.
And the three owners were three, were like, I would say a couple, but it was a triple.
A triple.
They were a triple. Okay. So they lived together. Each one was each other's boyfriend.
Nice.
They were in their mid-50s.
Right.
and they were very open about, and sometimes talked a little bit too much about their personal life. But, you know, we'd stay hang out and drink afterwards, and
right.
they'd ramble their mouth off. So I'm working at, you know, the Gangster's Paradise on the weekends and the Heart of the Castro on the weekdays. Right. And all the while looking for a job and trying to meet friends and establish a life.
Given the time frame, this is like over a period of 6 months, a year, like what's happening?
So, I landed in the Bay Area the end of 2004,
mm-hmm.
and I did this all through 2005. And at the end of 2005, I got a job offer to start the first business day of 2006.
Okay.
So, I did a lot of temping as well, because sometimes the bar gigs was, you know, you work for a couple hours and you have a whole day.
Right.
So some of the temp gigs I had was like answering phones, working the mailroom. I worked the mailroom at a law firm, like a high-rise law firm way downtown. I worked at a forklift rental company in Hunter's Point, which is by far the roughest area of San Francisco. Yeah, I saw people shooting heroin on the streets, and there was a guy got killed at the Taco Bell an hour after I ate lunch there. Yeah, it was definitely
rough. You worked at the 49ers facility, yes. I believe.
I worked at the 49ers at their season ticket office
mm-hmm.
at Monster Park.
Right.
So lunches there were kind of cool because I would just walk into the stadium and sit down.
Hang out.
And think, I'm the only one in this stadium. Like, who gets to sit in a stadium by themselves?
Yeah.
Not many people.
And then how did you finally sort of get out of the temp job bartending world?
So... that spreadsheet, that Excel spreadsheet just continued to go on. And after hundreds of rows and a few interviews, nothing was working. Nothing was happening. And, one of my buddies who I'm actually going to his wedding in May, which is a few months from now, but he asked me, he said, "Hey, do you want a job?" And I said, "Of course." Like, I almost died. Like, yes. He's like, "Well, I've got a contact there. We're pretty tight with, and if we vouch for you, you know, you'll probably get it. I don't know if you want it, but just check it out." And you know, the more I asked him about it, it's a technical position.
Yeah,
it's back room, it's operations, it's efficiency. I thought, wow, like processes, efficiency. This is engineering work. It's just not with metal. It's with paper or with numbers. So I went to the interview, and on the bus ride home, they called me and said, "Would you like you to come back for another interview? Can you come tomorrow?" I thought, okay, this baby is in the bag.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, you know, when I came back, they said, "Don't wear a suit, just be business casual." And it was basically the negotiation of when we start, what was the salary, this is the benefits, blah, blah, blah. And I have to say that was a pretty big part of conquering San Francisco.
Getting that job.
And through a friend who I met in San Francisco.
Right.
And now I had an apartment, I had friends, I had the job, and it was...
You had E40 support?
I had E40 support. I never shook his hand, but I saw him. He had like his own little back room that he'd hang out in. But he did help me on my quest.
So that's sort of like a little bit of how your stories to success... You know what I'm saying? Like, you made it, you conquered San Francisco, you've been here since then, you've only moved upward for the most part, right?
I suppose,
You live in San Francisco now, you're part of the city.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of stuff would you tell somebody? Because you took a lot of risks, and you suffered to an extent. You know what I'm saying? Like, you quit the job, you fished for dimes at the car wash. Mm-hmm. And me, I'm in a situation now where I don't have a job, I don't have a home, I don't have a girlfriend, I have nothing. I have a toaster.
Right, you do have a toaster. And I think, you know, the first thing is to start sifting through the vacuum.
Sifting through the vacuum for nickels and dimes.
For nickels and dimes.
But yeah, I mean, like, give me some sort of, like, you had a process. You know, like, here's my goal, here's how I get there. I want to talk about achievement, I want to talk about... sort of working toward that eventual goal.
Right. Well, I mean, and I've never really had the problem personally of knowing what I want. I think take a little bit longer, or it requires a little bit more energy and effort on my part to get what I want.
Okay.
So, I mean, my first advice is find out what you want.
Okay.
Get that goal, because it's got to be something you really want. It's not going to be worth it per se. The amount of energy you put in is not going to be worth, you know, what you get, unless you're just crazy about it.
Okay.
It's almost like a relationship or like working at a startup company. Like, those don't make sense. If you were to balance them out, you're putting more time and energy into something that really it's you know, the only reason that it balances out is if you're crazy about it.
Desire,
exactly. Find something that you have desire for.
Okay.
And then I feel like routine is very key. Develop a routine and develop it slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So my first routine was to journal once a week. So I thought if I just journal, it'll keep my mind focused.
Journal about what?
About that.
Oh, that goal.
About that goal.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So keeping focused on that goal. You've got this desire. You always dream about it, but dreaming doesn't do you anything. You need to put something into action. And so starting the routine of that action was like, okay, I'm going to journal. Sometimes my journal entries was, I played all week. I didn't do any job hunting. And then it was to build on that routine. Okay, I'm going to journal twice a week, and I'm going to job hunt twice a week. So building that routine, pretty soon I had this routine that was, I would be going to the bank, I would be checking my savings account, I would be doing so many things per week that when I look back at my journal, I think, wow, I've really progressed. I can't believe that I'm at the state I'm at.
Were you telling other people about the progress you're making, or was it a very internal, sort of just your own private thing?
I didn't make it that public,
mm-hmm.
just because people don't want to see you succeed.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you tell someone you want to do something, they'll tell you a million reasons why you can't, or why they don't think you could, or why they couldn't.
Right.
Although I did have a couple people that were very, very envious, or very interested, and I kind of gave them
some updates.
Gave them some updates or whatever.
Did you tell your parents about your sort of plans, or was it just more like, I want to go to San Francisco? They did their own thing, and then when you're ready to go, you're just like, oh, I'm ready to go.
No, I had conversations with my parents, and they were supportive, but they would always make sure that I didn't just do something, take an unwarranted risk.
Right.
They wanted to make sure that if I was going to do something, I would do it right. And that is, you know, make sure you have at least some savings if you're going to move up, or have a job if you're going to move up, or don't just marry someone who lives in San Francisco that you've met on the internet. I don't know. So that part.
And he's a very practical dreamer that you kind of did. Like, you had steps. You weren't just like, toss it all to the wind, I'm going to move to San Francisco. You had a step-by-step. You had spreadsheets. You had journals. You had goals.
It was not romantic at all.
Not romantic. It was you worked for it every
step.
Yeah,
it was a lot of work. It was a lot of elbow grease, per se.
But I think there's something to be said for that, something very good. Because a lot of people don't know how to do that. They don't. They're like, "Oh, I want to become this, or I want to do that," but they don't, or they can't, because there's no system.
There's that, and there's also the fact that I've got a confidence that I could pick up and move anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I could do anything now. That's like, it's part of my comfort zone. To pick up and go somewhere with nobody and nothing.
When did you gain that confidence? After moving here?
I think once I started that job, that career job.
Yeah.
And I had friends, and I wasn't sitting at home by myself on Friday in San Francisco because I was A, broke, and B, had no friends.
Right.
I thought, wow, I've got plans all month, and I have money to fund it.
Right.
And my boss likes me, and I got a raise. Like, those kind of things, like, man, I could do this again.
Right.
That wasn't so bad. But I would tell people, and I have one friend who wanted to move to New York.
Right.
And she would talk to me. I would probably talk to her once a month on her horrible life in L.A. and how she had a dead-end job and horrible roommate and blah, 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 blah. But she just couldn't do it. I said, well, I did it. my tactics. I gave her my tactics. I told her what I did and how. I think she's smarter than me, more hardworking.
Nobody's smarter than you. Nobody's more hardworking. Don't let anybody tell you that.
I mean, she moved to New York.
Right.
And she just got married in New York. Okay. She conquered New York.
She achieved.
She did. And I like to take a little bit of credit for that. just like 1% maybe. Because okay. There was a time where she would just complain to me, I can't do it.
Yeah.
And so
So
a couple of pep talks and a couple of in-depth, this is how my routine is, these are the things that I focused on and these are the things that I didn't focus on.
Yeah.
And
you're a little bit of an empowerment guru.
Empowerment guru. Yeah, I like empowerment.
Maybe you should empower the Yangs to achieve.
I feel like the Yangs achieve in a different way. and I'm still determining what it is they're achieving. But
some of us need to pass tests. Some of us need to get a job. Right. Some of us need to just be productive.
We got a journal.
The first thing we got to do is start a journal.
We're going to start a journal.
So me and George got to start a journal with our goals and our achievements. And then we got to sacrifice.
Well, no, you're already step one. And actually, I would say, you know what? Take that back. You're at step two. Step one is finding out what you want. Step two is failing at it. Because as you fail at something, that means you've already started trying. It means you're halfway there. You're on the route.
Right.
So you guys are further along than you think.
Okay.
And a lot of that's just perspective, but it makes you feel like you're actually moving
in the direction. That's good. I feel like I'm failing.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Right?
I'm really achieving.
A failure is worth a high five. It means you're halfway. It means you're on the way.
That's the quote of the day. A failure is worth a high five. I'm going to tell that to my mom and see what she thinks.
She gives you a high five, I want 1% of that credit.
Done. Okay, is there anything else you wanted to cover in this particular episode?
No, I don't think so.
Well, thank you for coming.
Good to be here.
Thanks for being such a special guest.
I love special guests and being one.